I already apologized to Ken for not being able to include the definition in my title. And of course, I might have sent in an abstract and I would be exculpated. But I'll explain that soon enough. I will, of course, make the ritual apology for not sticking to the subject of the conference. I'm not the only one. I thought I'd talk about this because I thought it would interest you. This is joint work. I should have written joint work in progress with Abbas Salemi, who is not only our guest at the University of Toronto this year, but also my grand student, being a student of Mehdi Rajabalipur. This is the most interesting thing about this, in fact, is the definition. And that's not new, and it's not ours. It's fairly new, and it was given by Olavi Nevanlina, who is not from Iran. In fact, his grandfather was the brother of the famous Rolf Nevanlina. The two brothers were both mathematicians, but the more famous one was Rolf. And Olavi is a very excellent matrix numerical analyst, also interested in applications to numerical solution of partial differential equations. And he introduced this idea in his book in 1993, which is a good book in other ways, too. It was discovered independently by Ann Greenbaum, who's also in matrix numerical analysis. And they've been in touch with each other, and we've been in touch with both of them. And here's the definition. We're dealing with a complex matrix, and there are sets of numbers which we know are interesting, the spectrum and the numerical range. The numerical range is interesting partly because because the spectrum is a subset of it, and in some situations fairly large subset of it. They're related somehow. And the idea of the new definition is to put something in between the two. So the kth polynomial Hall, or polynomial numerical Hall, is the set of complex numbers such that that polynomials don't take them to anything larger than the norm of the matrix. Now, if you think about k equals 1 and think about what linear polynomials do, you'll see that V1 is in fact just a numerical range. And it's evident from the definition that you're making a tougher and tougher condition every time you increase k, so it's evident that the sets will decrease. And of course they can't decrease forever in an n by n matrix because it has a minimal polynomial of degree at most n. And when you get to the minimal polynomial, nothing will work except the spectrum. So this is a way of interpolating between the spectrum and the numerical range. Another criterion which is worth thinking about, because it's not clear that it's equivalent. And it's very convenient to know that it's equivalent. You get into the set VK if and only if you can find a unit vector which will give you the number in the usual way for the numerical range, but which will multiply right. Now, of course, you can see that if lambda is an eigenvalue, it's going to have that property because we'll get lambda to the k on the right. Okay? But even if it's not an eigenvalue, if it's in VK, this will work. So this is a convenience for calculating. Now there are some things that are clear directly from the definition, which may give you little hope of being able to study these things. You know that for numerical range, you know how to put together numerical ranges of orthogonal direct sums. If you have a block diagonal, you just take the numerical range of the first block and the numerical range of the second block and take the convex hull. This is a piece of that. These things, of course, don't have to be convex or even connected, and so it's not going to be exactly that, but at least this is immediately clear from the definition. I actually meant to leave this up while I talk, so let me switch to that mode. So you can peek back at the definition or the equivalent characterization as I talk. So that's one thing that follows for any k immediately from definition. Another thing which is sort of nice is that if you have a domain and the boundary of the domain is in VK, then the whole domain is in VK because whatever polynomial you take, it must assume its maximum on the boundary. So if the boundary points all have this domination property, then the interior points have to have it too. So this gives perhaps some hope of computing these things. And so we started trying to compute them. Nevenlin and Greenbaum started trying to compute them too. They gave up rather quickly. And but they're interested in using them. And so they churned out a large number of computer graphics, beautiful pictures showing V3 for Jordan Bloch or what have you. But they weren't sure they believed them because, you know, you find 50 points which you think are in V3 because you've computed a lot of polynomials, and then you still look at it and you still don't know whether it's connected really. and you don't even know whether if it's not connected, you don't really know whether every component contains an eigenvalue. And so the on the one hand, the computer graphics are great, and on the other hand, they weren't really answering the question of the questions that are necessary in order to know whether this is going to be useful. Salemi and I thought we'd start with the easy case. That was too hard, too. I'll show you where we've got, and I think it's interesting as far as it goes. Now, there are some things that you can see right away, and here's something you know from the case k equals 1. If you take a line and the spectrum is a subset of the line, for instance, if the matrix is Hermitian, they're still normal. Yeah. I wrote down on the first sheet the things that were not dependent on normality, and from now on everything's normal. The same is true for a half space, and these are important for V1. Okay, so now we'll go to V2 and try to say the same thing, only now the set S will be a rectangular hyperbola. It could be the rectangular hyperbola real part times imaginary part equals 1, for instance. You know, it doesn't matter if I move these things around in the complex plane, so I'll just state things for the most convenient rectangular hyperbola. Most convenient rectangular hyperbola is either real part times imaginary part equals 1, or else, since the hyperbola could be degenerate, and that's the most convenient, in fact, it could be real part times imaginary part equals 0. In other words, either you're on the real axis or on the imaginary axis. Those are two different rectangular hyperbolas. Now, they have the same property for V2. If the spectrum is a subset of such a thing, then V2 has to be a subset of it, too. That's sort of nice, isn't it? And it's just because such a set is the inverse set under the square function of a convex set. In the first case, it's the inverse of a line, and the second case, it's the inverse of a half space. So think about it a bit. You'll see that this property follows. You'll notice that it's not conclusive. Just as in the case k equals 1, if you know that the eigenvalues are on line, you still have to find out how much of the line constitutes the numerical range, and you have to look at other sets in order to decide how far out to go. They could be half spaces. Okay, it's the same here. If you find that the spectrum is all on a rectangular hyperbola, then V2 is a subset of that rectangular hyperbola. But in order to find out how far out you go on the rectangular hyperbola, you might have to move around some other sets. Yeah. You cut pieces off. That was the picture I was trying to impart. You have the eigenvalues up here, and in order to say that you don't go any farther than the extreme eigenvalue, you look at a different thing. You look at a half space. Okay. And if you say, now I've got a half space over here, and all my eigenvalues are in this half space, then all my numerical range must be in that half space too, and therefore I can't go any farther out on my line than the end. And so we do the same thing here, because just as we can use a half space in the case k equals 1, we can use one side of a rectangular hyperbola in the case k equals 2. So it might be the rectangular hyperbola and the portion that sits up here. It might be the rectangular hyperbola, the portion that sits in between the two branches. Or it might be this, which is very nice. This is the first quadrant and the third quadrant, right? Because the degenerate case is the nicest. So let's look at that. I'll just put up a picture now of what we can say using this. If lambda 1 and lambda 2 are in the spectrum, and zeta is in the interval joining them, then zeta's in the numerical range. And so it has a chance to be in V2, because for polynomials degree up to 1, it works. But it doesn't necessarily go into V2 anyway, because if the spectrum is entirely contained in the degenerate rectangular hyperbola consisting of the two axes, then zeta won't do. Okay, and you just see that by looking at the second of these criteria. All the points on the rectangular hyperbola, on the degenerate rectangular hyperbola, have squares which are real, and zeta doesn't. Okay. So that's the simplest case, but let's look at another. Suppose we have a non-degenerate rectangular hyperbola here, and lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3, and lambda 4 are the whole spectrum of A. And then if we look at just k equals 1, we've got this green quadrilateral, and of course with interior by the general principle, and that's the numerical range, as you know. And this zeta here fails to be on the rectangular hyperbola. Or if there were lambda 5 out here and lambda 6 down here, I would speak not about the rectangular hyperbola, but about one side of the rectangular hyperbola, as I just had on the screen a moment ago, right? And zeta doesn't fill the bill. And if you apply the square function to this thing, the rectangular hyperbola goes up to a line up here, and the portion on one side of the rectangular hyperbola goes up to the half space above that, and zeta doesn't. So you can't have the no matter what unit vectors x you have. And you've got a lot of options what unit vectors to use if n is bigger than 3, which it is in these problems. But no matter what x you choose, you're not going to get it up there. Okay? So that's... now, as a consequence, I want you really to see why this works, because this is... it's only a corollary of that, but it'll show you what some of the proofs look like. So we have a triangle. Then V2 is just the points of the triangle together with the intersection of the altitudes. Provided that's in the numerical range. Of course, if there's an obtuse angle, then that won't be in the numerical range, so it's not eligible. But if it is, now why is that? Well, because we can choose our rectangular hyperbola as we please. And here's one of the rectangular hyperbolas on which all the eigenvalues lambda 1, lambda 2, and lambda 3 are. And so any point in V2 must be on it also. So any point in V2 must be either on the side lambda 2, lambda 3, or on the altitude to the side lambda 2, lambda 3. But I could say the same for this side lambda 1, lambda 3 also. Okay. So it's got to be on that altitude as well. Okay. Now, so that's the reason for that corollary. Here's another one I should have written down, and I won't bother writing it down now. I'll just say it. If the eigenvalues are all on a couple of rays, and the rays form an obtuse angle, then nothing else is in V2. Nothing inside that obtuse angle between the rays is in V2. Because I can put down my picture like this. It's going to be true for any rectangular hyperbola. I can use this argument for any rectangular hyperbola. And here I lay it down so that all the points in the spectrum are in two opposite quadrants. That means all of V2 has to be in those two opposite quadrants too. And I can move it around. I can move it around, so I sweep out everything that's in that opening. They're all excluded. V2 can't extend there. And of course, it can't extend outside either, because that's not even in the numerical range. Okay, so it looks pretty good, and we have more results of this sort. And now I just want to show you how far we are and how far we are not. Have a few more minutes, I can show you some pictures. These were not produced with Mathematica, and Nevin Lenna and Greenbaum would not approve of my giving an exposition of the subject with such lousy graphics. But going on to n equals 6, of course, you know I'm going to choose a rather simple choice of eigenvalues in order to be able to compute anything. So I take the eigenvalues arranged symmetrically around the origin, and it's easy to see that the sides of the hexagon are not in V2. I didn't draw them. I didn't draw the diagonals through the origin either. I drew the other diagonals. It's not too hard to see that they are in, and the reason is that we can compute a lot for quadrilaterals. I already mentioned that, and here we've got nice quadrilaterals whose diagonals are orthogonal, so we can use that method that I just mentioned. Okay, but that doesn't tell us how far out we're in V2. Just look at lambda 2, lambda 4, lambda 5, and lambda 6, and you'll see that from those alone, I'll get points in V2 that lie on this cross, but we can compute how far out they go, and the whole side is in. And if the whole side is in, then all these points are in. And then by the principle that if you got a closed curve that's in VK, the inner domain is in VK as well, we get the whole Mug and David, and with the interior is all in V2, and nothing else is. And the computation to show that nothing else is fussy. I just can't put on a rectangular hyperbola and finish. You just have to compute. And but that's pretty manageable. And V5 is manageable. V5 is just the spectrum together with the origin. That's not very surprising by analogy with the case n equals 3. But V3 and V4 are not within our powers at present time. Then to give another example of what we can and cannot do, N equals 5 is harder than N equals 6. I think that's not very surprising, because you saw the argument with which I began with N equals 6, and you saw that it depended on having an even number of points scattered around the circle. So for N equals 5, I think of the eigenvalues scattered around the circle. And then I look at the triangle, lambda 2, lambda 5, lambda 3, and I look at the point of intersection of its altitudes, and that's zeta 5. And zeta 5 is in V2 by the argument that I showed you before, without using these eigenspaces. So all these points around are in V2, and we can show that a lot of other things are in V2 as well, but we're not quite sure exactly what. Maybe it's a piece of rectangular hyperbola. We haven't computed this yet. We're dealing with 19th century geometry here, and I think we're medium good at it, so we'll get that pretty soon. when they run it off on the computer, experimentally. Did you do that yet, Davos? But we have the printout from Ann Greenbaum and it looks as if it was some kind of thing joining this up. Maybe a line here and a line here, or maybe a rectangular hyperbola here. We haven't computed that yet. As I said with the easier hexagon case, it's going to be hard. We can find a lot of points that are definitely there, but then at the end, it's a hard computation to show nothing else is there. Okay. And once again, V4 is the spectrum together with the point at the center, and V3 is elusive. Okay, so I could show you a few more examples, but you can see that a systematic description, even for this simple case of normal matrices of not very high order, a systematic description is rather far away. Yeah. Okay, that's it.